It's that time of year again. The calendar is fresh, and so are the aspirations. From South Dakota Public Broadcasting, today is January 2nd, 2017. This is In the Moment. U.S. Senator John Thune joins us today. We'll talk about how legislation can work within American culture to inspire us all toward lives of health and fitness. Plus, we ask him what he admires the most about President Barack Obama. Lifestyle strategist Elizabeth Hagen offers questions to help you realize a life that thrills you to the core. But only you can answer those questions. Plus, South Dakota's financial literacy report card features some encouraging news and plenty of room for improvement. We'll dig into the numbers later in the hour. All that and more is coming up. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment.
This is SDPB News. I'm Gary Lindbolt. Only a handful of counties in south central South Dakota is free of any winter warnings or advisories today. Various forms of precipitation are falling over much of the state. Brad Tiemeyer with the National Weather Service in Sioux Falls says travel was very difficult outside the Sioux Falls metro area this morning. Tiemeyer says things should improve later today.
We're expecting temperatures to gradually warm throughout the day today, and once they do so, that freezing drizzle threat will abate, but it's going to be a real slow process throughout much of the day today.
An estimated 2 inches of new snow have fallen in the Rapid City area. Meteorologist Scott Rudge says a large part of West River will continue to have travel difficulties.
Well, it looks like that'll remain throughout most of the day. It'll remain up until about midnight. We'll have our snow chances, and then after that, there could be some blowing snow as the winds pick up a little bit.
Forecasters in northeast South Dakota say counties near the North Dakota border could receive nearly a half foot of new snow. James Telkin with the National Weather Service in Aberdeen says very tough travel conditions could prevail over much of his region. Most of North Dakota is in a winter storm warning today. Some locations in that state could end up with a foot of snow a week after the area was pummeled with heavy snow and very strong winds. State weather officials say December's fluctuating temperature pattern will continue into the new year. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Kenzie Wagner reports.
Acting state climatologist Laura Edwards says South Dakota is in for a cold start to 2017. She says the weak La Nina affecting the region now could mean colder than average January and February temperatures.
Right now, it looks like we're going to start off the month of January very cold, potentially similar to what we saw a couple weeks ago, with very cold temperatures and some very cold wind chills. It looks like January 5th through 11th looks especially freezing, extra freezing maybe, with wind chills dipping down to the negative 40s and 50s.
Edwards says an extended period of cold temperatures can skew a month's average.
Having the really cold temperatures to start off the month will probably drive the average temperature for January down quite a bit.
Edwards predicts the cold snap to last until at least mid-January, but says warmer temperatures could reappear toward the end of the month. For the rest of winter, Edwards says she predicts mostly below average temperatures. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Kenzie Wagner.
A Pennington County kennel owner is charged with more than 36 counts of mistreating animals. Officials investigated the kennel north of Wall early in December. Deputy Corey Dressler wrote in a report the smell inside a barn was almost unbearable. Deputies say they found dead puppies, kennels full of feces, and animals without food or water. Animal control officers and the deputies removed a total of 75 animals, including dogs, cats, and rabbits. A hen pheasant was also removed. The animals are receiving care at Humane Society of the Black Hills in Rapid City. Janelle Gibson's kennel license was revoked a year ago after Pennington County inspectors found problems with the operation. And two Sioux Falls City Councilors want to have more time to look over decisions of major citizen advisory boards. Christine Erickson and Rex Rolfing are introducing a measure that requires board minutes to be recorded and posted to the city's website within 3 days. Erickson says it would allow the city to do their due diligence. South Dakota weather for the rest of this day, that winter weather advisory for all but the south central counties in the state. Cloudy with snow west and north, drizzled and freezing drizzle possible in the east. Highs from near 10 above to the mid-30s. For SDPB News, I'm Gary Lindbolt. Lori Walsh next in the moment on SDPB.
SDPB now covers your world better than ever. Start your weekdays with the award-winning Morning Edition, then catch the new On Point, mixing the day's top stories with opinion at 9, 8 Mountain. Be in the moment with Lori Walsh at 11, 10 Mountain, two fresh hours all about South Dakota. Then stay tuned for Here and Now, followed by an expanded All Things Considered, now at 3, 2 Mountain. SDPB, covering your world better than ever.
Program funding with your annual support and by SDN Communications, providing network uptime for business, internet, and connectivity. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
Enjoy the world's finest music on our second radio channel, SDPB Classical, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Beyond the beautiful melodies, SDPB Classical's passionate hosts illuminate the music they play with their deep knowledge and personal experiences. Listen to music that enriches minds. Go online at sdpb.org/classical, connect on the SDPB app, or tune in on an HD radio.
Program funding by Dr. Jim Zonna, where Dr. Aaron Rumsa has joined in family dental practice, including orthodontics. Murdo Dental, 669-2131, or smile at murdodental.com. Still, no pets.
Welcome to In the Moment. I am Lori Walsh. We kick off our program today with U.S. Senator John Thune. We asked him what he admires about President Barack Obama. We explored his concerns about America's place as leader in a global society. And we also talked about the possibilities and challenges of a Trump administration. We'll get to those questions later in the program. But first, in honor of the new year, we talked with Senator John Thune about the FIT Act. That's PHI. IT. It's designed to keep Americans moving toward health and fitness by breaking down some of the financial barriers. Here is what Senator Thune had to say.
In today's, you know, people have so many busy lifestyles today, and sometimes we don't have the best habits when it comes to nutrition, that anything we can do to encourage health, wellness, athletic activity, we should. And you know, I think families are trying to make better decisions that emphasize wellness and prevention when it comes to good health care habits, too. But part of it is, you know, encouraging physical activity. We live in a cold weather climate, and so anything we can do to get people out and about exercising and hopefully having better life habits when it comes to their fitness and their health. We want to do that. And so the FIT Act, the bill that we introduced in the Congress, which, by the way, is a bipartisan piece of legislation, is, I hope, in the end, something that we can get enacted into law.
Does it have to be resubmitted now, or what's its status right now?
Well, I introduced it originally in October 2015 with a bipartisan group of senators, but it does now have to be reintroduced because we start a new session of the Congress, but I'm actually hopeful that in the next Congress that we'll be able to get this thing actually signed into law. I'm growing more optimistic. I think that people recognize that it's a fairly straightforward concept, but that we need to provide as many incentives as we can. And in the long run, the more that we can do to get people to be more conscious of their health practices and lifestyle, the more cost-effective that is, because it means that you're probably not going to be spending as much on health care on the back end. So these are all, part of hopefully policies that will encourage healthier living.
30% of the state reports say is obese, 30% of us in South Dakota. Does that number surprise you for your state?
You know, I think I don't know where that fits in with the national average, but I do think it's, like I said, very hard in cold weather climates where you have so many months of the year that make it very, very difficult to get outside and engage in any kind of physical activity that, you know, that contributes to that. I do think, too, that sometimes the people or their diets are dictated by economics, and so maybe not the best when it comes to some of the nutrition choices that we make, but I think that's a problem that we need to confront. And, you know, clearly we're going to deal with it one way or the other. We're either going to deal with it on the treatment side when we start dealing with diabetes and some of the other things that come with, the bigger and increasing numbers in obesity, or we're going to deal with it on the front end. And I would prefer that we deal with it on the front end and encourage people, incentivize people where we can to make good decisions and to engage in healthier lifestyles, because that does save money in the long run.
So this is nonpartisan legislation. Not everything is nonpartisan legislation in Washington. Tell me your thoughts, a new session, administration change. Let's talk about the future a little bit.
Well, I mean, I think I hope that the new administration will work with us. I hope this is a priority for them. I know that health care is going to be is always going to be a big issue when it comes to public policy, because it affects everybody. And it's something that is costing the economy more and more money, whether that's on the government side and, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, VA, IHS, on the private side. And people have to buy health insurance coverage, and those rates continue to go up. And there's always, a debate about what are the best policies when it comes to our health. So I'm hoping that this will enjoy not only bipartisan support in the Congress, which it already does, but also support from the new administration, that we'll be able to get something through. I mean, it's very in a straightforward concept, and I probably should explain that just briefly, but it basically amends the Internal Revenue Code to allow for a medical care tax deduction on, qualified purchases up to $1,000 per taxpayer, $2,000 for married couples if they file jointly. And so it just encourages them to purchase the types of things that will encourage them to live a healthier lifestyle. And, not in a way that allows for joining of golf clubs or hunting or sailing or riding or things like that, but, joining a fitness center, sports equipment can be reimbursed if items don't exceed $250. Those are the types of things that we think will help in the long run to help us live the healthier lifestyles.
Why do you think people need that kind of incentive?
Well, I just think that, I think we're a culture that very much is interested in finding good deals and saving money. And I think that anything you can do that has an economic incentive attached to it generally does pretty well. And so I think that's kind of what that's the way we looked at this issue is what are some things that we can do? In this case, you could allow parents could use pre-tax money to sign their kids up for a soccer league, add a piece of equipment to their home gym, purchase a gym membership for themselves. But these are the types of things that I think people would be more likely to do if they had that kind of an economic incentive.
You've been listening to U.S. Senator John Thune. We continue the conversation with Senator Thune during our second hour. John Thune has years of public service to his credit. Jordan Youngberg is just getting started. Youngberg was elected to represent District 8 in Pierre. We begin our series on the incoming class of South Dakota state lawmakers today with thoughts from Jordan Youngberg.
This is my first year out there.
Give me an idea of why you wanted to run for office and head to Pierre.
Well, my deal was, I always sat around with people talking about, if the government did this, or if the legislators did this, we'd have everything worked out just fine. And it was all talk. And so finally I wanted to do something. And I believe being a part of, the solution, not the problem. And that's why I wanted to go out there.
How are you preparing to be part of that solution? What do you think you need to take to Pierre to really be prepared to hit the ground running for a short session, really?
Here's the deal. Taking an open mind is the biggest thing. Being a new legislator, you're going to get reached out to by a lot of people, and it's information overload for sure. And you got to have an open and clear mind and retain information. And that's what I'm trying to gear up at to do so that I can go out there and make good decisions and all that.
Give me an idea of what your background is professionally.
Business owner. I own a small pest control company based out of Madison, South Dakota, and I'm actually just bought a restaurant out by Woonsocket at the MT corner there. I kind of have both ends of my district covered.
Yeah, and you're a busy guy right now too.
Yeah, never a dull day, that's for sure.
Give me an idea of what some of your priorities are from a legislative standpoint. Do you have certain topics that you're really excited about digging into?
the two things, you know, obviously I'm serving on the agricultural board and local government. Those are two things that I think are very important for our state. You know, local small government, one, is a big deal. And then obviously agriculture is a big thing. And what I'm doing, you know, I'm more excited about getting out there and being able to learn the process and learn this stuff. I'm not taking out any agenda this year, you know, and as far as any year, you know, my job is to just go out and work for hard for the people of District 8. So,
yeah. Did you have any first impressions at the governor's budget address that sort of stuck with your mind?
It's, you know, it's just like everything else. It's a very complex deal, like everything out there. You know, there's a lot of factors in all that, and there's a lot of factors in every law that's, you know, being written. So that's the one thing by, you know, keeping the open mind and all that I think is important.
It's a fairly large freshman class. Do you have any thoughts on, as a group, what kind of impact or influence you could have on the state?
I think we're going to bring a lot of good change. You know, there's a lot of questions right now. There's a lot of whys, you know, going on for, say, you know, why do we do this way? Why are we doing that? Why can't you do this way, kind of sort of thing? And I think that always brings that's bringing a more fresh look at the legislature, and I think it's good. I think the people of South Dakota were ready for that.
Yeah.
You know?
I initiated Measure 22. Have you seen the impact of that as a new lawmaker or not yet?
You know, I have, just in the sense, you know, that's, like I said, that's a huge, complex deal. And what I've noticed with that, the biggest thing I noticed, and it's just a lot like all the other stuff, you know, I'm not saying everything's written this way, but I'm finding that a lot of the complexity of these issues and bills that are put out, it's almost, they're too complex. I mean, they're very, you know, I'm not going to say ridiculous, but in a sense, you can't sort through it. And I think people are finding that in this. And personally, as far as it has impacting me, I think it's inhibited, you know, a good learning curve for myself as a new legislator for now. But going forward, we just have to see, you know, how it plays out and all that. So.
And what are you looking forward to the most about this experience?
Learning and serving the people of District 8. You know, I'm just like everybody else out here. You know, like I said from the get-go, it was just a lot of questions of why and this, that, or another. And that's what I'm most excited to do is to just, you know, serve the people that want me to be out there, just, you know, my neighbors.
Are they going to be following up with you, you think? Your neighbors are going to, you have a good way to sort of connect with them?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, the nice thing about now, and I've said this, you know, a part of bringing change to the legislature is the, you know, the availability to contact somebody anymore is, you can do it. I mean, I'm on my phone right now doing a radio thing. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
To be able to, you know, it's not like you got to drive down to the studio anymore.
Right.
You know, I can think of, you know, five different ways a person can contact me that'll all ring to the same phone, you know?
Right.
And I think having that availability, and I already have had lots of that as far as people reaching out, you know, wanting to talk about this, you know, hey, can we get a game plan together, you know, for this? And it's really good to get the feedback that I am getting. You know, I'm glad to see it.
Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure to meet you. We look forward to seeing what you and the other new lawmakers do. We'll be following up with you throughout the session to sort of check in and see how those expectations unfold. So thanks for your time, Jordan.
Awesome. Thank you. Have a great day.
Hey, you too. That's Jordan Youngberg from District 8. We'll feature the members of the freshman class of the upcoming state legislative session all week on In the Moment. Children at the Rapid City Public Library celebrated the new year a day and a half early. The half day comes about because they rang in the noon year, counting down to 12 noon on Friday instead of 12 midnight on Saturday. Children gathered on the second floor of the library to make masks and crowns, and then they moved to the first floor lobby for bagpipes, balloons, and a ball drop. As SDPB's Victoria Wicks reports, the reviews were a rave. The first-time event was awesome.
A lot of the people working on crafts are parents with toddlers sitting on their laps, too young to handle scissors and glue. For some kids, New Year's Eve means staying up past their bedtime. At this noon Year's Eve celebration, these babies get to stay up past their nap time. But there are big kids here. Cousins Morgan and Lily are 8 and 9, respectively. They say this is the first time they've attended it. The people working on crafts are parents with toddlers sitting on their laps, too young to handle scissors and glue. For some kids, New Year's Eve means staying up past their bedtime. At this noon Year's Eve celebration, these babies get to stay up past their nap time. But there are big kids here. Cousins Morgan and Lily are 8 and 9, respectively. They say this is the first time they've attended a New Year's party designed just for them. Morgan speaks first.
What do you do on New Year's Eve when you get to stay up?
Usually I keep on going to the news because they show the New Year's countdown.
Where is that? On TV?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's Lily's turn. What do you think about this day, this party?
It's awesome, actually.
And what's awesome about it? What do you like?
Well, since it's all kids and how it has all the fun games and stuff like that.
And do you get to stay up on New Year's Eve, typically?
Sometimes, not all the time.
Yeah. Is this the first time you've had a kids' party?
Yeah.
For yourselves?
Yeah.
They hadn't really thought about making New Year's resolutions, but they didn't have much trouble coming up with some good attainable goals when I asked first Morgan and then Lily. So is there anything you want to do next year? Get better at something or...
Get to a higher reader level. Yeah, reading level.
Yeah. So, how about you? Do you have any New Year resolution?
Getting better at softball.
I leave Morgan and Lily to their crafts and move to another table where 9-year-old Amelia sits with her mother and baby sister.
I'm making the mask.
How about this? What's that?
It's a clown.
Yeah. Have you ever heard bagpipes before? Do you know what bagpipes are?
No.
Well, you're going to get to hear it today, so that'll be something new, won't it?
And we're excited for the balloon dropping on us.
That's right.
Okay, I want a balloon drop on me.
You want balloons to drop on you?
I want to take one home.
I think that's probably going to be okay. I'm guessing.
Maybe kids don't really get to stay up until midnight, so why not do it at noon? And then they can enjoy New Year's as well.
Organizer Janet Parr says children love creating, and so offering crafts is a good way to kick off the celebration. But she says there's a lot more to this one.
We have giant bowling pins. They're having a lot of fun with that over there in the corner. And a giant checker game. Then we have a bagpipe player. His name is Saeed. He is downstairs and Shirley Temple's for the kids.
Parr says these events get kids to come into the library where they might also be drawn to reading.
We put out book displays with New Year's books, so if making masks and listening to bagpipes makes them take books home, then, you know, that's the goal, final goal. Yeah.
At a few seconds before noon, Parr leads the countdown. The net drops dozens of pastel balloons that float down onto kids whose faces are turned upward. At the same time, a silver ball, kind of like a shaggy disco ball, slides down a slender pole. A few adults sing along with Auld Lang Syne, but the kids mostly chase after balloons and blow on noisemakers. Balloons soar and sink and soar again, kept aloft by children who catch and toss them before they can hit the floor. The scene is joyful pandemonium. Afterward, Morgan and Lily confirm that the event exceeded their expectations.
It was awesome.
Why is that?
Because there was tons of balloon drops and they got to bring that ball down, and then we all got to get all the balloons. And
I thought it was cool because we get to take the balloons home, and I like the music a lot too.
So what are you going to do tomorrow night, New Year's Eve?
Maybe not stay up. It's a possibility.
Staying up until midnight, it is a possibility, maybe less of one for the sort of young and sort of old, and more possible for the in-betweens. A happy noon year celebration is a lovely option for those of us, yes, I said us, who just can't seem to keep our eyes open late enough to ring in the new year. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City.
To see pictures, awesome pictures, including photos of Morgan, Lily, and Amelia, head over to listen.sdpb.org. We've got lifestyle strategist Elizabeth Hagen after the break talking about creating a life that reflects who you are at your core. You're in the moment. SDPB Radio. And welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Elizabeth Hagen is a lifestyle strategist. She doesn't wait for a new year to take stock of living her best life. We asked her about facing 2017 by setting aside time to write about the life you want to live in the coming year. Let's go ahead and start with the whole concept of New Year's resolutions or evaluating your life at a new year. Why is this a good time or a bad time to think about life changes?
Well, I think New Year's is a great time, but the only challenge is that over the years we've probably set many resolutions or goals on New Year's Day and not achieved them. And so then we kind of come in with kind of a bad attitude of why even do it, because I'm not going to achieve them anyway.
It sticks with us. We remember our inadequacies.
Yes. Isn't that the truth? Yeah. And so, in fact, Laura, I even did some digging into statistics. And do you know what the top resolution is almost every year?
I can't guess.
Okay, lose weight.
All right. I could have probably thought that, I guess.
Yeah. And second one is getting organized, which I love because I help people get organized. But the percent of Americans who usually make resolutions are 45%, okay? But the percent of people who are successful in achieving them are 8%.
Wow.
So something's going on there, right?
Yeah.
And that's happened to me, too. Over the years, I've set them and not achieved them, so why bother? And that really has been on my mind, Lori, the last 2 months or so as we're coming into the new year. And I thought, you know, I want to have a great 2017, as everybody else does. You know, what could be done differently? And what's interesting is with resolutions or goals, Lori, is that people will make them. Let's say they're going to run 10 miles a week in 2016. And they don't achieve that. So on January 1, 2017, they set a goal of running 15 miles a week, even though we didn't reach the goal from last year, you know? What I think needs to be done is to really dig into ourselves and look at what was good about the previous year, what wasn't so good, what we need to change, and do that work first, Lori, before we set our goals for the new year.
What does that look like?
Yes. So I actually was so fascinated with this that I decided to take a class from a company called Uplevel You, and it's on how to give vision board retreats. Because I really believe that if you can set your goals and then have them on a board where you can see them every day, they're much more likely to happen, okay? And so in the class, I learned that there are some questions to ask. So may I share those with you?
Absolutely, please.
Fantastic, okay? So the first one is to, on January 1 or right now, or January 2, whatever you're listening to this, is fast forward 1 year from now. Okay, so a year from now. And then what are three obvious changes you've made over the course of the year that you're super proud of? So you envision yourself a year ahead, and what three obvious changes have you made? Okay, so you write those down, okay? Mm-hmm. And then the question to ask is, what is one great big dream you have that would thrill you to the core if you achieved or manifested it? Okay? Hmm. What is that, the big thing inside you?
Right.
Then we look at ourselves and write down three habits you know you need to release. We all have habits we know we need to release.
Interesting, though, that you need to release the habits, not three habits that you need to form. These are three habits you need to let go of.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You're like hitting the snooze 10 times, you know?
How did you know? No.
Yeah, well, because I'm like anybody else. And then, then we ask ourselves three habits we want to begin. Okay. So we release before we list what we want to begin, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then here's an interesting list. Then list five qualities that describe how you want to be over the coming year. I mean, what a different question is that? How you want to be, you know, more sympathetic, have more energy. You want to be more loving. You know, what do you want to be?
Mm.
And then list five things you want to do. You travel, have a baby, you know, any of those things.
Sure.
And then list five new things you want to have.
Have.
And that isn't from a materialistic viewpoint, okay? But it's okay for us to want to have what we want to have.
Okay.
And if we, you know, don't write them down, I won't have them. Like one might be something like this, and you want to phrase these as if they have already happened. For example, I have all the time in the world for travel, or I have traveled to Australia, okay? I have a wonderful spouse who adores me. So you listen as it has already happened.
Why is that important, the phrasing there?
Because then you can envision yourself. If you say, I want my husband to love me more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, what does that look like, you know? And then we're wanting, right? But what if we say, I have a wonderful husband or spouse that adores me? That puts us in that place of being there and receiving it, I believe.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then list five words that describe you in your essence at your very core.
Hmm.
I mean, who thinks to write these down, Lori?
Yeah.
I didn't.
I have not. No,
yes.
I mean, can say that confidently. I have not done this exercise. Yeah.
Yes. And so that describes you at your very core.
Mm.
These are your clearest, highest self, you know? And so if you do this kind of prep work, because I've done this,
mm-hmm.
then the goals or resolutions come up, arrive, that I really want. Instead of saying the same things over and over again as me do, I want to get organized, I want to lose weight, whatever, you know, is that truly what you want? Because if it is, why hasn't that happened? And so I would encourage your listeners to go through these exercises and take some time and then come up what they want to achieve in 2017.
All right. Do you think sometimes we make goals or resolutions based on what we think we should want? So we say we want to run 10 miles, but really we don't.
No,
we just want to pretend that we did.
Yeah, because everybody else says that. And Lori, we make them based on what someone else wants for us. You know, maybe going back to the organization thing, maybe a person is horribly disorganized or wonderfully disorganized, whatever. And their spouse always says, oh, I wish you'd get more organized. So they make that resolution. But it isn't a dream of theirs. And so it won't happen.
Sure. All right. So I've sat down. I've really spent some time just by myself, which sounds lovely, you know, as a first day of a new year or first week of a new year activity, exercise.
Yes.
I'm going to put that notebook away and forget about it unless I take the next step, right?
Right. So here are some tips, all right?
Okay.
So one is to do what I've been doing now, is make a vision board, is where you are clear and have the clarity first of what you want, what you just said, or you have, okay? And then you look through magazines, periodicals, and so forth, of pictures that show that for you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe, again, back to the, I have a loving spouse, okay? Maybe you should have a picture of a couple having fun together or something, okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Maybe yours is to lose weight, or like the better term is to be happy with my body, you know, be more fit, and maybe you have a pair of dumbbells on the board, or a picture of running shoes.
Okay, sure.
So you can see this every day. But again, if you put this board away, or some people do this in a notebook, these pictures, which is fine, it's got to be out in front of you every day, because okay. we're going to forget.
Right.
We're going to forget.
Right. I'm wondering if throughout the year, sort of, those images would reveal new things to you, too. So you might look at a picture, and one day it means something to you, and then a yeah. month later it reveals, like, oh, I didn't realize there was something else in that picture that I was really drawn to. If you spent a lot of time with that, did you find that happening to you?
Yes, yeah. Because when I do these retreats, I tell the people in the retreat, look for pictures that resonate with you. Sometimes you don't even know why. Okay.
Sure.
But don't think too much. Just pick them, and then yes, you'll have specific pictures for your certain goals you want. But also put ones on there that you're not really sure why you are, but you do it anyway. And I think that's true, Lori. Those pictures can reveal something else or something bigger throughout the year.
It's interesting to me as well that we're talking about writing, and we're talking about sort of an art collage too. So this is the fine arts kind of integrating into daily life as well. Do you think that's significant?
Yes, I never thought about it that way, yeah. Lori. That's really good. That's really good.
We think of the arts as one thing, but as an other, there are artists out there who are doing great work, but this is collage work, really, with a vision board.
Yeah.
So there's probably some benefit in the process as well as the results.
Yes, there's an amazing benefit. And the first part, when I gave you those questions from the Up-Level U course I took, it's really getting clear, because too many of us just say, oh, it's January 1, oops, what do I want, bam, 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 mm-hmm. But you aren't clear first what you want. And like you said, maybe somebody else wants it for you, or you think you want it, but you don't really want to run. And so the clarity is key. It's absolutely key.
How often do you, you create a vision board, you put it somewhere where you see it, or you have your journal. How often do you revisit sort of this exercise? Do you redo it throughout the year, or do you check in with yourself? How frequently?
Sure. A couple different answers to that, Lori. My vision board is sitting right here where I can see it in my office. Okay, so it's a daily thing. Mm. But also, you know, things may change as the year progresses. And you may want to do a completely new one, or maybe you've accomplished one, either take it off or put a new one on top of that, so it can, it can grow with you as your year goes.
Interesting. How has your life sort of changed as you've applied sort of what you learned? And then after that, I want to know how other people's lives have changed through your teaching this process to them.
Okay, sure. The big part for me was the change in how I look at what I want for 2017. Instead of just popping, just thinking of things off the top of my head, I really took the time to really think about, like, releasing the habits and then what ones do I want to change, and really, really looking deep inside myself, I guess, Lori, instead of just kind of doing it superficially.
Right.
And so because of that, I'm a positive person anyway, I think, but I'm much more positive because I see what is going to happen. I believe it's going to happen. That's another piece too, Lori, that we need to believe that if it's inside us to want, that it's going to happen.
Hmm.
That's huge.
Yeah.
And from my retreats I've given, a lot of times the people come in kind of nervous about doing this, kind of heavy-hearted because they tried this before in the past, it didn't work. And we do the clarity work, and they sit on the floor, and they're cutting pictures and so forth. They start to glue them on, and you can see, Lori, their shoulders kind of letting loose.
Mm-hmm.
Their head is taller. And then at the end, we have them stand up and share what they want to about their board, and they're absolutely beaming. because one thing is they've given themselves, because it's a day-long retreat, but they've given themselves a day for themselves. Who does that, Lori?
Right, right.
We don't do
that.
That's
a rare thing, yes.
Yes, so they give themselves a day to really get clear. And so I've just started giving these retreats. I can't give you an answer of how they've done this a year from now. But for me, I know it's been pre-life changing.
Yeah. I've followed your work for years, and you're always coming up with something new. That's one of the things that I admire. And it always seems that the things that you have come up with that are new come from who you are and where you're going next on your journey. Am I kind of getting you?
Yes, more than most.
that's your own business plan, is to sort of move yourself to the next level and then bring the rest of us along.
Yes. And it's like, Lori, I hate to even say this, but I'm going to say it. I've never written down a business plan.
Really?
Never. Because I never have. Yeah. And like you said, as I evolve in me, I want to bring people along, and if they can benefit from what I've learned and not make at least some of the mistakes I have that I made, it's a good thing.
Yeah. Give us when these next, you're teaching some workshops in Sioux Falls, I think, and most of your workshops you keep relatively small. The group,
yes.
The group is small. There has to be a reason for that. Tell me what it is.
Yes. When I give my own workshops, not when I brought in to speak to other big groups, okay, that's different. But
right.
On my own workshops, I want to get into their lives. I want to really get to know them. And if we can make it, you know, 8, 10, 15 people, and I get to know them better, but also, more importantly, they feel more comfortable to share. Mm. New friendships are made. And so I think it's just a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. So tell me where the next workshops are and where people can find information about you and about what you're offering next.
Sure. So I'm giving my next workshop in Sioux Falls on January 14. And I'm giving a virtual one, an online one, on January 16 for people anywhere in the world.
Wonderful.
And so that's going to be really fun. I've not done that yet, so that's going to be a very fun experience. And simply, if people can just email me, I don't have a sales page or a web page. It's just me talking to people one-on-one via email or phone and find out if it's right for them, and then we get them signed up.
Wonderful. Elizabeth Hagen, I hope that you will come back throughout the year with more tips to help us push 2017 forward in a way that makes sense for each of us individually.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you, Lori.
We appreciate your time. That's lifestyle strategist Elizabeth Hagen. Up next, South Dakota's financial report card is not all that it seems. We break down the numbers when we come back. You're in the moment, SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. South Dakota is one of just four states to receive a B-plus grade on the 2016 National Report Card on Adult Financial Literacy. That's released by Champlin College's Center for Financial Literacy. John Pelletier is the center's director, and he says don't get too excited about that grade.
Well, I mean, South Dakota looks pretty good compared to its peers. When you look at its overall grade, it's a B plus, and that's pretty darn good compared to most of the country. Most of the country is much lower than that. That puts you near the very top in terms of states. You're literally in the top six or seven states. So we only have four states that received an A minus. No state received an A plus. No state received an A.
All right.
So Minnesota, North Dakota, Utah, and Hawaii are a little bit ahead of you. Other states that got B plus are Wyoming, New Hampshire, and Iowa, along with South Dakota. So there are eight states in total that were able to get that good of a grade. So that puts you in good stead.
Tell me what we're measuring. What are we looking at to get that grade?
We're measuring actually 59 unique data points.
Mm-hmm.
So we're measuring just a whole variety of topics. We're measuring financial knowledge. We're measuring credit, and we break credit into a variety of subcategories. So we look at housing credit, auto credit, credit card, student loans, and there are a few other credit categories, sort of a general catch-all, other credit. And then we look at kind of high-level credit concepts. An example would be your the state's average credit score. But from one of the reporting bureaus, we look at saving and spending, retirement readiness, and other investing. Mm-hmm. And then the last category is protect and insure.
Okay. So break down the data a little bit, or let's dig into the numbers and tell me what we do really well, and then some areas where we didn't fare so well, even though we got an overall B+. What do some of those smaller numbers look like?
Well, you do pretty well on housing credit. One of the problems, North Dakota and South Dakota were the only states where we were missing a few data points. So with housing credit, you got a great grade, but there were three data points that I wasn't able to capture because they didn't exist for your state.
What does that mean?
We're trying to figure out whether or not you had the percentage of equity-rich mortgages that you had, that, you had a lot of equity relative to the debt outstanding, average loan-to-value ratio on a mortgage. So an example would be if your loan-to-value ratio is 80%, that means you have 20% equity on average of homes that have mortgages out there. Mm-hmm. So that's 82% nationally. So I don't know if you look better or worse. Whether or not you have seriously underwater mortgages. So those are mortgages that you owe more than 125% of the fair market value on. I doubt that would be an issue that you have in South Dakota. That's still an issue in states even this many years after the Great Recession in places like Arizona and Florida and a few other states. You look very good with credit card debt. The percentage of people saying they always pay their credit card in full is very high relative to the nation. It's almost 61%.
61% of South Dakotans pay their credit card debt in full every month. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. That's based on a survey.
Sure.
That was done, which is statistically significant for every state. You have a low amount who said they only paid the minimum monthly payment over the last 12 months in any of the 12 months, just slightly more than 26%. And that compares to about a third nationally.
Okay.
Things of that nature look good on the credit card data. You also credit came out very well. Saving and spending, on the whole, you look very good across the board, except for a couple areas in there. So an example would be you look fairly good on a relative basis of the percent of people that do not have an emergency fund.
Mm-hmm.
That's about 46% of the state does not have an emergency fund.
Okay.
Now, you may say that's not a great number, and it isn't. The one thing I really need to emphasize is what this report is.
Mm-hmm.
This is a relative grading system. So basically, I'm assuming I have a class of 50 students,
mm-hmm.
and the student who has the best result gets an automatic 100, and the student who gets the worst result gets an F or a 55. And using just a mathematical linear curve equation, once I know who has the best and worst, based on your actual data points, I'm just plotting you on a curve, all the other states. So the best way to think about this is if you have with regard to one data point, a lot of people not doing well, and they all do poorly. The fact that you did a little bit better than your peers might give you an A. It doesn't mean you're doing well. And probably the best example of that, I think, is the answer to the question. I was offered and participated in financial education, either in the workplace, in K through 12 schools, or college. And the South Dakota is at about 26%, not a great number. Mm-hmm. But that gives you a B. Your state looks much better than other states across the nation. But it doesn't mean that you should be proud of some of these results. Some of them are pretty poor, in all honesty. But they're poor for the entire nation.
Give me an idea of how financial literacy of the kind that you're talking about really has an impact on individual lives and then really on a state's economy or, you know, on a community as a whole. What's the impact? What does this look like in real life? So I get a B+ and it's not very good, but, you know, what happens next? Why do I care?
Well, let's start with the individual because I think that's the easiest one to get your head around.
Yeah.
For the individual, the best example to focus on is the credit score, right? Mm-hmm. The credit score that most individuals have. Some individuals don't even have a credit score, so they're not really part of the credit economy. They can't get revolving credit. Mm-hmm. But if you have a credit score and it's really, really good, so you have excellent credit,
mm-hmm.
That means that when you go and buy a home, when you buy an auto, when you have a credit card that you're using to finance some purchases, you have the opportunity to get the lowest interest rates available out there. If you have horrible credit, but just good enough credit to get credit, they're not denying you credit, you're going to pay a much higher rate. And the best example is, you know, the next time you get one of those offers in the mail that say you have been pre-approved for a credit card, actually open it up and look at the fine print. Because what it will say, which is kind of odd, it says you've been pre-approved, but then it generally will give you three different interest rates that might apply to you receiving that credit card. It says you're either going to get, an example would be 13% interest, 18% interest, or maybe 24% interest.
Mm-hmm.
So you have three different interest rates. Which one applies to you is entirely dependent upon your credit score.
Sure.
So they're going to look at your credit report, your tri-merge credit report from the three major credit bureaus, and based on what bucket you fall in, you literally might have a 10 or 11 percentage point annual interest rate differential between somebody with great credit and somebody with horrible credit. And so most people are going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars over their life in interest payments.
Hmm.
And
sort of depressing.
If you have bad credit, it could be something as simple as this. There's a couple of credit calculators out there that try to estimate this, and they're directionally correct. I don't see the guts underneath them.
Mm-hmm.
But they allow you to put in a couple of samples, and they make an assumption. Same person, same age, buys a home, has a credit card, gets a new car with a loan every 7 years. And the only difference is your credit score. How much credit do you pay, you know, over the remaining period of your life? And it's often double in interest payments between somebody with great credit and somebody with poor credit.
Mm-hmm.
So that money that you're paying to someone who's just letting you borrow the money could be used to do other things, like you could put it away for a rainy day fund. You could save it for retirement. You could do something else with it. So to me, that becomes pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of your question had to do with, how does this impact the economy? Probably the best example I can think of, we've really moved systemically over the last 40 years from a place where a lot of folks had pensions to a place where very few people are going to have pensions. That means that we're going to have to retire. We're going to have to rely in retirement on two things. One is Social Security.
Mm.
Now, for the average person out there, the average individual Social Security payment is about $16,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. not a ton of money, $16,000 a year. So for most people, if you don't have access to a retirement, of a pension, right, if you're a traditional pension, you need to rely on your personal savings through your 401k plan or your 403b plan or your individual retirement account plan or other savings. And here's where it impacts the economy in grave ways, is as we have this baby boom group retiring, if they're not adequately prepared for retirement and they become maybe unhealthy enough to continue working or can't, you know, get a job post age 65, they're going to rely on the state to help them out if their payment from Social Security isn't enough. And so there are a lot of folks on Social Security getting food stamps and other government assistance that's provided either by the federal or state government. So the inability to budget correctly and save for your retirement can really be a big impact on folks.
That's John Pelletier with the Champlin College Center for Financial Literacy. If you'd like tips on how to start the new year with an eye toward money management, tune in tomorrow to In the Moment. We'll have more with John then. We want to connect with you. Email us at inthemoment@sdpb.org, and you can text us 605-956-7372. That's 956-SDPB. Stay tuned for hour two of In the Moment. We'll have more with U.S. Senator John Thune, including his thoughts on Donald Trump's choice for Secretary of State. Plus, Jim Kent takes you to the burning of Rockerville, and longtime radio broadcaster Chuck Anderson joins us for Images of the Past. You're listening to South Dakota Public Broadcasting.